Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. So glad that you could all join us this week, and hoping that you had a good holiday season, depending on which holiday you're listening to this episode on.
Right.
Could be Valentine's Day.
Only during holidays. Yes. This is a mysterious episode.
Hello, future people.
Fortunately, you can just borrow a saint from the Catholics.
There you go. They've got plenty of them.
There's a saint per day.
So. Yep.
Saint Rita.
Oh, yeah. You remember? I think my mom had one of those books on saint per day.
I think everybody I knew when I was a child had that, like, literally on the calendars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It just has the
Interesting.
The name of the saint for every day.
Interesting. All right. Saints.
There's more saints than that. There's more saints than one for each day of the year.
Yes.
Some days have multiple saints.
Yes.
What about the poor saint that got February 29th?
Saint Lucky Bastard.
That's Saint Hubbins, the patron saint of footwear.
All right, let us get back into our adventure. The party, Rodrigo, if I remember correctly, had just crossed over into a snowy, wintry zone, and all those scary, spooky, golden kind were not following.
Right.
Yay.
So, for some good news, you are inside a wintry zone, and the golden kind aren't following.
Yay.
Now for some bad news.
Oh, no.
You're inside a wintry zone and woefully underdressed. It is. After the initial shock of those guys not chasing you and not shooting at you, you realize that in here it's, you know, -3 degrees with wind chill.
How long can everybody survive?
Oh, we'll just see. I'll just start dealing damage to you guys as the scene goes on.
All right, that's fine, because if we can take 10 minutes, I can cast Enduring Elements, and that'll protect us completely.
We can also pull out the winter gear that we probably still have.
No, because Aurum threw his away.
You
whenever
guys
we
ditched it.
Yeah, when we got there and it was Hellfire and Damnation, it was time to shed those heavy cloaks. So give me 10 minutes.
Idiots.
Give Aurum 10 minutes.
So much time and care to get them.
Well, that's why our
that's why
we call him the GMDM.
No, that's right.
The GDDM. Yes, the GDDM. All right, give me 10 minutes.
The General Manager Dungeon Master.
Yes, General Manager Dungeon Master.
General,
give me 10 minutes. Aurum starts casting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Everybody huddle up.
Me, grabbing some of the elements, squeezing them, filtering through my hands.
My arm stuck to my other arm.
Don't stick your tongue on your arm.
Premium
waving and chanting.
Yeah, Torque is definitely covered in metal.
Waving and chanting.
Awesome blue glowy metal, but definitely cold.
Yeah.
All right. So,
and then as the 10 minutes finishes,
Trell and Ked are huddled together then.
And now suddenly everyone is not huddled. Feeling the extreme biting of the cold.
Randus is 70.
No check.
So is this like the area is nice, or is it that we ourselves are personally...
We ourselves are personally capable of dealing with extremes in weather and temperature.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Does it require proximity, or are we all like blessed?
Nope. You're all blessed.
Proximity when he completes the ritual.
Brian, blessed.
Yep.
Thanks, Aurum.
You're welcome.
Great.
How long does that last?
24 hours.
Nice.
Let's hope that's all we need.
Or
is it
take another 10 minutes? And
yeah.
It seems
an
like
affected creature suffers no ill effects from ambient temperatures between -50 and 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and the creature's equipment is likewise protected from the ravages of these temperatures and of precipitation.
So how big is the area that we're
in? It's not.
I mean the snow area.
It's about 100 yards across, I think. I think I said it had a 50-yard radius.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What's in the center?
Yeah, head towards the center.
Okay. Head towards the center. Well, the center kind of slopes up, and at the center there is like the highest point of accumulation, which it's kind of like this whole place is kind of it slopes a little bit, so it's just kind of little bit of a peak, but you know, snow just kind of rolls down that. It just seems like most of the snow has accumulated here. It's probably only, you know, a good 20 feet off the ground. Actually, 20 feet's a lot. We'll say a good 10 feet off the kind of the base of this little hill that you're in.
Can we see what the golden kind are doing?
Yeah. Oh, yes. They're gathering.
Mm-hmm. Are they encircling us?
They have encircled you. There's, you know, you can see across, and everywhere you look, there's some kind of lizard or ape or bird or slug or whatever that has a golden head.
Are they in the sky as well?
Mm-hmm.
But not immediately overhead, right? I mean,
right.
They're still in a perimeter,
exactly.
That, like a,
right, exactly.
Like a,
it's
huge,
like a
column,
cylinder.
That
goes, yeah.
Cylinder that extends up. So,
yep.
I want to pull out my Jimacine one more time.
Okay.
And I roll a 23.
Did you add trials?
25.
Arcana or?
No, perception.
Okay.
And I'm just looking to see if there's any invisible creatures, objects, or any illusion that I can see in this area. I'm actually looking for.
You already got that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's 25. So I'm looking for any sign of the Winter Queen. Or the person that we are supposed to contact in this area, or.
Or the plot.
Or the plot, yes. That is what I'm looking for.
Signs of
or like
plot.
A guy with a helpful hat.
Yeah, yeah. Or somebody with a question mark or an exclamation point right, above their head.
Just
any unexplainable device.
Right.
Here's one.
A context-sensitive pad.
Well, anything that is beyond what we see out of the ordinary.
There's a Hello. Little mountain of snow right at the center of this.
Start digging.
You just say out of the ordinary when we're standing in a 50-foot wad of snow.
Well, this 50-foot wad of snow should be what this natural environment is.
That's true.
While surrounded by mutant gold-headed freaks.
So, yes, yeah, start clearing away some snow.
All right.
Little by little.
You clear away some snow, and when you get to a pretty decent hole, you brush something hard.
Hey, guys.
Mm-hmm.
There's something here.
Can you
start clearing away some more?
Okay.
Hello?
You clear away some more and find a hand. It is a long, gnarly hand.
Don't touch it.
How long? Like, is it my size? Like my size hand? Like twice the size of my hand?
It is. It's definitely longer than a normal humanoid hand. The fingers are longer. The palm is a little bigger. And the forearm just, you know, because you guys uncovered it a little bit below the wrist. And, you know, the forearm appears to be also a little bit thin and elongated.
Does it look like a lady hand?
It looks like a...
Does it have pretty nails?
It does not have pretty nails. It has gnarly, icy nails. The hand looks like a chunk of ice. Like, it looks like it's carved out of ice.
Okay.
That's so we can continue to clear things away gently.
Let's try and clear towards the head.
Yes.
Okay. You clear and clear and clear, and eventually the hand flops down. Just thump.
Like, there is detached?
About, yeah. It doesn't even get to the elbow.
This is not good.
Put the thing on it.
No, not yet.
Why not?
If this isn't the Winter Queen and we destroy the enchantment?
I don't think it would. Based on the nothing that she knows.
Can we clear away any more? Do we see any more part of body, or was it just a hand?
Just a hand.
Was the hand there at the epicenter of the exact... Okay.
Yep.
The hand was the exact epicenter?
More or less. Well, I mean, now that you've disturbed the site, you know, it's really difficult
to
tell.
Yes.
Well...
Let's
try
clear a little more, see if there's something else.
Clear, clear, clear. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Nope. You guys spend, I'm going to say, a good 15 minutes clearing stuff out. And everything that accumulated, just accumulated because of this.
I don't like the ring of
from a
golden kind around us not shooting at us or doing anything.
I vote putting it on there.
Is there anything that makes us think that the enchantment would be used up if we put it on the wrong creature? I mean, do we have any expectation of that? If we put it on his hand and it's not the witch,
I think he's asking. Because you're asking out of character.
Yeah.
I'm not talking funny. I'm actually asking if we remember anything.
No, I don't.
Rodrigo told us once that if Orin put it on, that it wouldn't really have an effect because he's not enough. Something. That's what I remember.
He still
knew
it wasn't special.
He's not mighty enough or something.
The tears stained my pillow that night.
Oh, well,
stop making Adriana cry.
Keep it up. It's actually kind of entertaining.
I don't see anything else here. Anything else that would resemble something created by or representation of the Greater Fae in this area.
What about the snow?
Yes.
Reach into the handy haversack.
Wait a second. Does this hand look familiar to me?
No.
Okay. It's not. Just double checking.
It's Amaya.
Pull out the item.
Okay.
Do it.
What?
Do Randus?
It. Go ahead.
This doesn't look like Randus's missing hand or anything like this, does it? The one that he lost years ago.
No.
Okay.
You did hear the description of it,
yes,
right?
Yes. Birthmark is completely different.
So what is this?
Oh, you mean at the tower? No, this is the one that he lost before he met you.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank goodness.
Oh, I was wondering where.
What is this? What is the? What does this one look like? Is it a ringlet? Just a little ring?
It's the same as all the other ones. Okay. It's like a bracelet, like a wrought iron bracelet with a little crystal, kind of gemstone looking thing.
Slip it around the hand, the wrist of the.
Hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Get ready for
of
anything.
The, of the semi arm. And step back.
All right. You slide it in there. Step back.
Next time on Critical Hit.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
Oh, that's not good.
So it's
not
weird.
Bad.
It's not. No, that's true.
Grab the hand.
Okay. Take up the hand.
Should we, like, put it in something?
You probably shouldn't touch it, maybe. I don't know.
It's too late. I already picked it up.
All right. You pick it up, and it actually doesn't feel that cold.
Hmm.
I mean, it's cold. It's like picking up something that's made of ice, but it's not like this thing is emanating cold. It just seems to be causing it.
So what happens if I start walking towards the edge of the
that's
circle with the hand?
You start walking towards the edge of the circle with the hand. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
All right. Good to
what
know.
Happens
wait,
when
wait,
I start
so the,
walking?
The yeah. hand is a loose hand?
Yeah, it wasn't attached to anything.
Yep. Oh, I thought it was just still a hand. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was like, hand, you can't see me. Hand.
Just sticking up out of the ground?
Sticking out of ice. Okay.
Nope.
Okay. No. Okay.
Well, it was. There just wasn't anything below the ice.
Okay, I get it. Is it, does it, how does it end? Is it ending in like a...
Bony, meaty... Chunky.
Yeah, or just nothing.
Or just...
It doesn't end in nothing. It ends like it looks like it was shattered.
Oh.
Crack.
Hey, Rodrigo.
What's up?
I'm going to look for other things that look like shattered pieces of a person.
Okay.
Piece of puzzle.
And I'm walking towards the edge of the circle.
All right.
I just rolled a perception check of 13.
Okay.
I'm doing it slowly.
Right.
It's not like I'm running off to the edge.
Right. As
Orim
starts walking towards the edge of the circle,
I kind of am taking aim at the just general mob
right.
at the edge.
with
fat good that'll
near
do.
Orim.
Yeah, with Ket and Randus with their firearms out. It's very obvious that the section of golden car that you're walking towards starts backing off.
Does the snow that's falling move with that? Does the epicenter stay?
It's really gently falling snow, and the cloud is kind of like ambiguously cloudy, so it's hard to tell moving at this speed. If you say were to sprint that way, you might be able to see a much more drastic effect.
Do I have any idea what this is?
It's a hand.
It's a hand.
A frozen hand.
Frozen hand.
That I am holding.
By the way, did you take the charm back, or are you keeping it on the hand?
I think I'm keeping it on the hand for right now.
Okay.
Because I don't know where else to put it at the moment. because I've got a hand that I'm holding.
Right.
Kind of in a gentle, both hands, because, you know, it's almost a up to the elbow, you said?
Almost up to the elbow, and it is longer and thinner than a normal hand.
I'm kind of holding it gently.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the bracelet's still on the hand for
hey
now.
Guys.
Yes?
Doesn't that look like it's all busted? Like
yes.
somebody just busted off? What if they busted it into like a million little pieces and they're all kind of laying around? We should look for other pieces.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we see other clouds in the distance?
I think maybe it is, so...
Ooh, guys, I think Torch right.
Yeah.
And this can be our ticket to traveling to those places.
Like,
so the question is, do I keep the bracelet on?
I say slip the bracelet off for right now.
Okay. Yeah. What happens when I slide it off? Nothing?
Also nothing.
But the golden kind still seem to be mightily afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where
well, they don't seem to be afraid because they don't have facial features.
Right.
They're just keeping their distance.
Nice.
Hmm. What happens as I get even closer? Do they still
they
back
up? They continue to back up. And by the way, the ones that on the opposite side walk towards you.
Wow.
So there's a obviously there's a radius, a circle of protection around this hand.
There's a circle of cold. Around
Exactly.
Yeah. So are they walking onto snow then as he... moves or or is this
and it and they do not seem happy about it, but it's probably not cold enough. And that's the thing is outside of this it's like 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Doesn't the hand doesn't feel like it's thawing out, it doesn't.
No.
Okay.
No. And it's that sort of thing where like if you're grabbing ice for a while, you know, your hand starts to go numb and it starts to hurt a little bit.
Right.
But it is just like normal, like if you work like go outside on a really awful icy day and like tear off a stalactite from your porch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So stalactite. You said there were some other clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Where would they be at?
Which direction?
Can I get a vantage point and find out?
Not from here.
There's no trees?
Yeah, there's a tree.
We'll have to go to it.
Can I climb this tree and find it?
I'll give you this one. When you go to climb the tree, it snaps. Like, the first branch that you hang on to snaps.
Because it's frozen.
Too cold and
because it's completely frozen.
What direction were the clouds that we saw in?
Farther north. Like, you only probably only saw a couple more, and they were just kind of in that general direction.
All right. Let's try and find the clouds?
Yeah.
I guess that's the only thing.
Put her back together?
That sounds like a good idea.
Probably the option.
Okay, I guess.
Do they seem to be just staying on the perimeter of the cult?
Yep.
Seems like it.
Looks like
that, that may have been in or out of character, depending on which you listen to. There.
So, but we did kind of scour the area and didn't find any other parts?
Nope, no other parts.
Okay. So I guess we can...
We're sure. We're clear on that.
Slowly start... I mean, maybe not slowly, but start to move.
Start to move.
Steadily. Move towards
the
north.
Looking a little blue.
Hmm? Oh, I had noticed this.
Give it to Randus.
Okay, are you sure, Randus?
No, it'll stick to him.
There is that chance. But...
Right?
Your systems can operate at peak efficiency if it's colder.
And, you know, we've got that spell going for 24 hours, so it's not like any
true.
Of our... It's not like what I've been feeling.
Actually, now that you mention it, because you do have that, you're not actually feeling it. Like, you can tell that it's really cold, but it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
I'm fine.
It's not affecting him at all.
I'm fine. Right. So let's walk walk north.
Okay. You guys start walking north.
All right.
All the creatures continue to follow, but maintain their distance.
When it becomes clear that you guys are just walking north, some of them kind of... go off, other different ones join, and they basically, they get out of your way, but there you still have a procession of, like, maybe, we'll say 400 or 500 creatures kind of following you.
What's going on with the environment as we're walking in this?
It starts to get cold, it starts to freeze. As soon as you get close enough to a river, it starts to freeze.
So we don't really have any terrain issues. Because the ground firms up because of the extreme cold.
It does. It does. So that makes things, that makes traveling a little easier. Of course, up ahead, it's pretty clear that some of these guys are trying to like dam up a river to essentially flood it at you.
Mm. Okay.
Since it's a technique that works out so well.
Yeah. So as I'm walking and looking at the hand, mm-hmm. anything beyond the first description that you gave us, any kind of marks or signs or any kind of
long and gnarly and nubby and cold.
Do they read poems in this world?
Do they read poems in this
palms?
palms.
Almost.
You know what, guys? Yes. Stop a minute.
Yeah, but it's not very common because there are literally people who can cast rituals who can tell the future and stuff.
Diviners.
Yeah.
Divination.
So there are palm readers, but they're like a step below a shaman in a village.
So let me ask you this. Would History Revealed work on this?
I believe it has to be able to talk to you somehow.
Okay, so you touch a willing or helpless creature and you see the most defining moments of the creature's life. Doesn't say anything about speaking. The images appear in order from the most important to the least. Your arcana check determines the number of past scenes you see. These scenes you view are most pivotal to the creature's history and are not chosen by any agency. Performing this ritual more than once on the same creature invariably displays the same scene unless the creature has experienced defining moments since the last time you performed the ritual.
Mm-hmm. Is this hand enough of a creature to perform the ritual?
Well, you're not going to know until you try.
Okay. Oh, guys,
also,
stop.
Did you use your eye thing on it?
No, I have not. But, you know, this thing, I don't know how I got this or who gave this to me. It's been so long since.
Master Alfred. You mean the eye of
Yeah,
the
gem of seeing. This thing, I don't know if it works. You can kind of bang it out. Shall we try this History Revealed and see if this works?
It seems like a plan.
Okay.
What do we got to lose?
We got 10 minutes, so please keep your eyes out.
Can he walk and chant at the same time?
Yes. This is one that I have to stop and think because these are going to be visions that flash into my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to trip and break them. The bad thing is this is a real expensive.
Instantly kill the enchantment.
This is a really expensive component cost. 600 gold pieces.
Mm.
And so
that's a level 1 item.
That's a level 11 item.
That's a level 11 ritual.
Ritual, yeah.
600 gold pieces is the cost of a level 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think it's actually less than that.
500.
It's
maybe.
Like 320.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a couple level 1 items.
Go ahead,
guys. Do you think we should try talking to them?
To what?
The golden kind?
Yeah.
I don't.
No. No.
I'm not entirely sure they can talk.
Well, I would assume they'd be talking in our minds.
Talk to them and see. I wouldn't suggest it. Who knows what kind of psychic things they can put into your head.
There's 500 of them.
Wait till the...
Okay, start my History Revealed chant. Only takes 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
Concentrate, sitting on the ground, holding it in my hands, legs crossed. It's kind of spooky because my eyes are like super bigger than normal.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got there?
That's a 16. 16
plus 18 is 34. So I can see 4 scenes.
Okay. And it's in order of importance from... Most important to least important?
Mm-hmm. The most important to the least, yeah.
Okay. So, you are in a field. It is daylight. It is a warm day. And a young... Elven boy takes some of the hair that's in front of your face, just coal black hair, and wipes it to the side. He leans in to kiss you.
Aww.
Vision one.
Vision 2. You are riding a chariot made of ice. It is pulled by these enormous feral goat monsters that just snort cold, and they just like form this ice bridge with their hooves as they ride, and you are just like at like 1,000 feet above the ground as you're doing this. There are golden kind everywhere, and you just have, you know that there's this thing that is changing your heart, and as it does, you become more and more powerful. But you look at your beautiful, slender hands as they just gnarl up and just get completely covered in frost. And as you basically get to the top of your flight, as you're just like shooting beams of ice at these things, you get to the top, whatever transformation is complete, and just everything changes. You change, the world changes, the time changes, you know, the direction of everything starts to change. And you just see the golden kind just kind of flop to the ground. And these are golden kind that you haven't even seen. I mean, just like these enormous city-sized, you know, flying, you know, mammalian, multi-limbed monstrosities, obviously with a, like big golden heads. And they just kind of slowly, like their golden little eyes, like roll back into the back of their heads, and they begin descending as kind of like from the, you just know that the ground is never going to be warm again. There's just nothing about life that's ever going to be warm again.
Can I question these scenes?
Nope.
Okay.
Scene 3.
Okay.
It is some kind of battle is raging, and you are looking across this battlefield, and to you it seems like it's a message, but to everyone else it's like this wave of energy, just kind of perceiving these things on both sides. As you get closer to the battle, you realize that it's all kind of like, they all look like Eladrin. And as this thing happens, this event, you see them change. You see once on one side, you see their skin turn pitch black, their hair turn white, their pupils turn white. You see once on the other side, essentially their the color in their eyes constricts to a single point, and they just become more solid. And then the one, basically also another one on that team, they just kind of lose a part of themselves. They retain that magicalness that they seem to have, but it's like something else gets taken away. 4?
Yep.
The universe shatters. And that's just what it feels like. You are looking across this barren, cold wasteland of a swamp, and everything shatters. The world shatters, time shatters. The individual flakes of snow shatter into a bazillion pieces. Your consciousness shatters.
I come out of it and relay these visions to the rest of the party. I was kind of hoping we would have been able to see some kind of a location where she could have been scattered. In that second vision, as things are changing, it feels like she's falling apart. But this is definitely who we're looking for, as I hold up the hand. We're going to have to just continue to move up in that direction. I may not have told him everything about that.
Sure.
Third vision. So, we need to continue to move. Trying to find these other parts.
Okay.
That's all I got. Rob, anything? Ket, anything?
That sounds
Trail,
like
do you feel
right
anything?
Person.
Well, I think I should try and feel for this. I mean, we can't really get a good vantage point. And judging by how they seem to be damming up another river for us, it's not a lot of choice here.
Would Eagle's flight do us any good? Now?
Fly yeah. right into those birds.
Very possibly. Yeah. We have
we
to
would avoid the river. We would travel a heck of a lot faster.
How fast did we travel, do they?
Overland flight speed. But the cold it depends be, on what you roll.
No. Problem for them.
24 or lower, the speed is 8. Overland flight is 10. 25 to 29, 10 for the speed. Overland flight, 15. 30 to 39, 12 or 20. And 40 or higher is 15 speed. Overland flight, 30. But the question is, will this zone of protection go up with us if we were that way? Would the birds be able to land and fly with all of this?
Well, the snow isn't all that heavy.
Okay. Randus, what do you think?
It'd be worth a shot.
At the very least, we'd be able to get a decent vantage point and spot the clouds a little better.
It'd be that if, you know, we could
if
go
it doesn't
by.
Work, we could always land, and we'd be in the same position we were before.
Yep.
Who want, I guess it's up to me to do this, or Randus, do you think you could... do this?
We it's
could.
A nature check, isn't it?
The speed is based on the nature check.
Yeah, your nature's going to be a lot...
My nature's pretty high.
Pretty good.
It's 12.
I could assist you.
Can I assist somehow?
Yeah, you can assist.
All right.
Sweet.
All right, so we sit down. Again, this one's an expensive one, 400 gold.
As well?
Sure.
Man.
How do I assist?
Roll a nature check.
Okay.
Yeah.
Start concentrating. On the great mighty eagle. Not very good.
29.
Okay.
What am I doing? Nature. 18.
3.
20.
18.
Plus.
Oh, okay, plus so 2. 20. 20.
Plus 6.
We each give you a plus 2, so 24.
Okay, 24.
24? What does it say?
24. We get 24 or lower. We've got a speed of 8, overland flight of 10. Not super fast. Creatures take a minus 4 penalty to attack rolls and defenses while carried by the eagles. The eagles can't attack or affect other creatures in any way. The eagle's defenses are equal to yours, and if the eagle is hit by an attack, it descends to a solid surface to drop off the creature it carries, then flies away. Eagles who have flown away during combat can be called back as a standard action outside of combat.
Okay. So you're summoning 5 eagles?
It says up to 8 eagles carry you and your allies. Each eagle can carry one medium creature. So, yeah, one for each of us is what we need then, I'm guessing.
Okay. All right, so you... Yes.
The hands move slowly.
Do the motions burn the appropriate salves for summoning, and you... The first glimpse of it is a shadow above the ground. And then more shadows begin to appear, at which point a just horde of birds begin to of golden kind birds begin to form a ring around the perimeter. But those things that are flying in manage to elude them, and there, as you complete the ritual, lands an enormous golden eagle about, 9 feet at the shoulder as it's standing, with a wingspan of probably a good, 15 feet.
Okay. But still plenty of room for all of them to be within the circle of range.
It's like 100 yards.
Okay.
Are these like...
giant eagle spirits.
Did he summon like actual eagles, or are these like eagles made of magic?
This is... What you see is an enormous golden eagle land. Then at either side of them, these two black eagles, one of them has a yellow beak, the other one has a red beak and a red face. And then at either side of them are these two white eagles, one of which has a black face, and the other one is just kind of mottled and covered in like random gray feathers. And they all just kind of stand there in this V formation.
Well, I address the eagles.
And start to get covered in snow.
Okay. Great eagles, we require assistance. We need to fly quickly to other areas like this. It's of most importance. Please take us on our way. I guess they're at our command, right? So it's not like I have to say please, but they're eagle spirits, so why not be nice?
I think they're actually eagles.
Yeah. Well, it says eagle spirits.
Oh, it does say eagle spirits. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The one in front, like, basically sits a little bit like a chicken and lowers its head.
I climb on its back neck area.
Yep.
And then I'm guessing the others respond and everybody gets to pick their favorite eagle, I guess.
I call red on black.
Okay.
Randus?
I'll take the molted one.
Trill?
Black and gold beak.
Okay.
And that leaves the black with white?
White with a black
beak. Yeah, white with a black beak. Okay. For
Torque.
Torque. So we get on, and we lift off.
I'm so sorry.
It.
She's saying that to
me. Yeah, it turns all the way around. It's all right.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And, yeah, they all crouch down, and they just take this gigantic vertical leap that just lifts you up like crazy, extend their wings, and start flying. And we'll leave it there for now.
Excellent. All right, everybody, that wraps it up for this installment of Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. At least for the gameplay. Do you guys want to do a quick question or two, or do you think everyone's far enough gone?
Yeah, questions.
Well, questions.
Brian is literally falling asleep here.
Yeah.
Oh, Brian.
Let's just do a real couple of quick questions. Yeah, it is cute.
Check Brian into bed.
Especially when he thinks he's running.
His little legs.
Yeah, it's just like kicking.
Let's do a couple of quick questions. All right, Brian. I didn't take your picture.
It's a rabbit.
I didn't take your picture. I won't post it on the internet.
I won't post that picture I didn't take on the internet, I swear.
Frederick says, as a DM, I'm finding the storytelling is pretty hard. I'm just getting right to the questions, getting over the whole thing about funnel cakes and Disneyland and Splash Mountain and all that.
Oh.
But Frederick says, my D&D question is this. As DM, I'm finding the storytelling is pretty hard, and world building is even more difficult, probably because I'm never satisfied that I have all my bases covered. As experienced players and game masters, do you find it easier and more efficient to build the world and then plug in the stories, or is it better to build the world as the game progresses? I tend to get really far ahead of myself with the story, but I'm way behind and scrambling to come up with a proper setting. Any tips on balancing the two? I'm sure with more practice I'll find my niche, but right now I feel like I'm juggling battle axes. That's from Frederick. Who wants to tackle that? Matthew?
Why?
Hello, Matthew?
Yes, hello? Yes.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
Strange things just happened. I always have two bits of advice for anyone who's trying world building. First of all, you probably do want to put a lot of forethought into it if you can. But if you can't, you want to try and find something of a similar tone that if you do get to a point where you got nothing, something of a similar tone that you can, I don't want to say steal from, but I do want to say steal from. To where, you know, if you know that your world is something that you want to have the kind of tonal quality that you get from an episode of The Walking Dead, and you get completely hung up, you think, what would happen at this point in The Walking Dead? Or, you know, George Martin's Game of Thrones. If it comes to that point and you have to vamp, just try and deal with the vamps. And sometimes you're going to say something stupid or do something that doesn't work. And you kind of have to roll with those punches as well. Just like, you know, the characters are going to have a moment where I respond and it doesn't sound like Torque, and Rodrigo goes 5 points of psychic damage because that really didn't sound like Torque. We're all going to have those moments, and I think your players are going to give you a little bit of leeway as long as you're trying to remain consistent.
You know, what helps me is I try to figure out the core of any given organization. And that's anything from a family to a government to a kingdom to, you know, a secret cult. You know, is this organization, you know, what are their goals? What are their ideas? Are they legalistic? Are they a meritocracy? What are they? And if you figure out that core, it's a lot easier to vamp around it. When your players go in a direction where you don't know, or normally you wouldn't know how the NPCs would react, if you have those things figured out, if you're like, this is what elves in the setting behave like, or this is what, or what they're like, rather than necessarily even what they behave like, this is what they believe, this is what they care about, it makes things a lot easier when you're a curveball gets thrown, and it makes it a lot easier to generate their societies, their architecture, all of this other stuff. If you just go from, you know, what are the core concepts that this society latches onto? Does that reduce a society to a certain degree to just a certain amount of concepts? Yes. But this is, in the end, a work of fiction, and you can't have things so complex that they just seem like everything is included. Because you want individual things to be memorable. You want your players to be able to say, ah, these are the guys who are ruled by wizards and have weird tattoos on their heads.
Yeah. Sometimes you have a planet of hats.
Mm-hmm. Got nothing else.
All right. Zachary says, love the show. You always get me through on the worst days. My question is, how can I run a D&D game via Skype when I'm the only one with a cam? My idea was to take pictures of the tiles and monsters after every round and post it to Facebook. I know it isn't terribly easy or efficient, but all my old friends are in Ohio while I am in Texas. Hoping to get your feedback either through email or in the show itself. Thanks. So, first of all, you might want to go, didn't D&D Insider launch the...
Virtual tabletop.
Yeah.
Haven't messed with it at all.
Once, like, a year or so ago, and I was not a fan
there
of it.
There's at least a couple of things in the things coming down the pipe that will try to take tabletop stuff and make it so that you could run it either through Skype or through Google Plus, depending on the project.
Oh, and actually, there is something in Google Plus right now that has the map and has this bunch of stuff, and I forget what the add-on is called. One of our listeners wrote to us a while ago, and we may have mentioned it. But I think we tried that out briefly, or at least I did. I know I opened it up and played with it just briefly. But there's those options too.
Right.
The only one with a camera.
If you're the only one with a camera and you're the only one running, then it's probably not a big issue. Yeah. I mean, it's nice to be able to look at people's faces. But if you're running a D&D game, you know, your biggest concern is going to be the mat.
Right.
If you feel that you need to be able to look at each other to role play, which certainly helps. Then pressure your friends into getting cameras.
I mean, really seriously, a webcam, a simple webcam. Most computers have webcams built into them, don't they?
Yeah.
Doesn't your little one right there have it built in?
Yep.
So, I mean, there's that. And then you guys hear it as we're playing it with Adriana and Matthew, is that they're saying, hey, move me that way or move me this way, and we're moving those characters in the direction that they want us to. So as a game master, you could certainly do that. As far as a web camera, you know, ours are just mounted on a real cheap... it's like a box on top of a roll of tape, on top of an old mic stand, clamped onto that, and I point it at the map. You know, if you want to get real fancy, you know, lower the camera from a couple of strings from your ceiling so it's, a couple of feet off the, you know, tabletop, so you're peering straight down on top, but... you know, to be honest, with Google Plus, which you really should check out, and some of these tabletop gamer apps out there, you guys should be able to do something very easily through Skype.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most like simple and easy solutions are some of the group drawing programs that exist. Mm. where you're in a kind of chat room and there's you can all draw together. And honestly, I think a lot of the time, like, you set up like a grid, and then you can move things around. There's like a lot of different options. I think a lot of people don't think about art programs as being like an option, but for D&D, but I think like a lot of the D&D things can, like the virtual tabletop, I was really overwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. And, when you get down to brass tacks, like what you really want is a visual representation of your characters. And if you can do that, if you want to do that, then you don't need a lot of bells and whistles. So I suggest like looking into some of group art programs that exist.
Yeah. That's a good suggestion. All right, Michael says, this will be our last question because I think Brian's about ready to start snoring over here.
Yep.
Hello, I have a question for you. I'm Catholic, so I tend to be a little bit more careful when it comes to my morals in D&D. For example, the gods aspect in some D&D games leaves me really uncomfortable. Now, I have talked to my game master about it, and we have worked it out, and so that isn't my question or my problem. I was wondering if you or any friends of yours have felt uncomfortable with the god play or any other moral aspects of D&D games that you've played. I am certainly glad I found a game master who understands this. Anyway, thanks for the great content you put out. Keep it up, says Michael. You guys ever felt uncomfortable with any moral situations or god play situations? Certainly, some people might have some problems with that, and we've talked about that before in the show.
There was one point in a werewolf campaign where it got to where we just got to a point that it was going a little further down some darker paths than some of the people were comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And the GM basically stopped and said, all right, this is the kind of story this is progressing to. He wanted to make sure that every single one of us was comfortable with it. Which we did have one person actually say no.
Uh-huh.
They quit for that session.
Yeah.
You know, their character went back to wherever we were at. And we pressed on from there. I know I've had a few I've never played with any of them, but we've got a group that actually runs out of one of the game groups that we do run out of some of the churches around here. Mm-hmm. So I know there was a few questions about that earlier on, but
when I've played with those guys, they're playing in like I've ran for them, and it kind of didn't come up. You know, for me, there's kind of been two, like one category and then one individual instance. One category is that where maybe not even the game master, but a player takes the game in a particular direction and it's uncomfortable to everyone else.
Right.
I think I've told that kobold story,
Okay.
So that kobold game is a great example of everybody going, no, that's not the direction we want to go. The other one is I actually had somebody come to me, and this was playing Exalted, who was like, this does not match up with my religion.
Right.
So I can't play this anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, cool. I mean, if you don't want to play it, but, you know, to a certain degree, as a game master, you have to accommodate your players. But if, like, the central themes of the game is, you know, dealing with
right and wrong
sort of or dealing with religion as mythology, for example,
right.
or taking, you know, using basically a hodgepodge of pop religions. You know, if you read something like Sandman, you know, the stuff that's happening there does not line up with the Bible. Or the Quran. I mean, not for long anyway.
Yeah.
Not with any of the holy texts, because he's just taking basically all of the cool parts and meshing them into this world.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the sort of game you're running, you know, you might have people bail out on you, and you can't necessarily warp then the world to accommodate them if you know, kind of playing with religion as an aspect of storytelling is something that you're doing.
What about you, Brian?
Oh, well, I know many indie games, they suggest before starting a game, especially, you know, the narrative-heavy ones, establishing lines and veils, basically establishing things, that topics that you don't want to broach at the table, mm-hmm. things that you just want to keep away from, things that you it's okay to approach without explicitly going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
Matthew, what about you?
Well, I have a problem in that I've been in some games where the whole point was to be as absolutely horrible and transgressive as possible.
Human-occupied landfill?
Yeah, the whole point is to see how incredibly horrifying you can be. And I'm really kind of fine with that, because to me it breaks down to the role-playing experience being about not being about me. But then again, you know, I understand that there are going to be people. I haven't had anybody come to me and say, you know, from a moral or religious standpoint, something is wrong. But I've had people say to me, you know what, I don't like this. This kind of sucks. Or this is problematic for me. Or I had one person explain to me how he couldn't be a part of the game because two characters were having a relationship that he considered to be completely wrong and over the top, which I guess now that I mentioned it is, in fact, a moral issue. So what it really comes down to was the question of, could they continue playing their characters and have me step in and say, Bobby doesn't want this anymore? Or would it be something where, and what I ended up doing was I took the three of them, I said, here's the situation, this is what's happening here, this is how he feels, this is what's going on, what do we need to do, what can we do? And I talked to the players, and what it really broke down to was, stop making that the central portion of the character, and he was able to play along with it. I think what it really comes down to is a question of, again, I always say this, open the lines of communication, mm-hmm. and make sure that if there is something in the game that you're not cool with, that you say, I'm not cool with it. Sometimes for me, it's fun to, as the character, respond to something that is problematic. Sorry, apparently the alarm is going off. I don't even know what that is. So,
well, as far as the isn't this Goddess on a Mountaintop? So it's kind of apropos for Goddess on a Mountaintop.
You mean like Venus?
Venus. Yeah. Religion.
Steven never sang that with a V.
Yes. I am not a super religious person. We started off talking about Catholicism in this, making jokes of the saints. So I grew up Catholic, but I'm no longer that, and more aligned with the Buddhism than anything else right now. So the God play doesn't bother me, because I just see it all as mythology or narrative that you're spinning. That being said, and again, this is my first full Dungeons & Dragons campaign that we've played. Mm-hmm. I've tried to take my character that we've created, or that Rodrigo has created for us, and try to follow their moral beliefs in the game. And that does create some interesting conflicts, especially the Seven Owls Wise was one that was, at one point, if I remember correctly, was like, no, we're not doing this. This is not my, with the deal with Ozzie Davis. Yeah. He's like, I'm not making a deal with the devil. That is not going to happen. No way. That is based on his belief system. And so I think that, you know, sometimes being able to role play these characters with different morals may strengthen your own morals or belief systems.
It definitely
through that. I mean, it gives you a chance to explore.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that goes back to what I said before, is if you have that core of, you know, I was talking about organizations, but if you have the core of the character, you can always make decisions as that character.
Right.
And that actually makes it a lot easier to roleplay. You know, sometimes the answer is going to be no. Sometimes the answer is, sometimes you ask, can I reconcile my own beliefs and what I like with what's going on in this game, whether it's because of religion or because it's, you know, a particular stance or a particular tone that the game is taking. Sometimes the answer is going to be no, and you have to remove yourself from that situation as a player and do it in such a way, hopefully, that is not going to upset everyone else. Yeah. You know, because in the end, people get together to have role-playing games to have fun. I mean, you may, and I've heard some horror stories about role-playing games, mm-hmm. but usually if you can just get yourself out of that situation, you're probably going to be fine.
Adriana, what about you?
Well, this is like a weird question for me, because like, mm-hmm. I studied a lot of ancient religion and stuff, so it's hard for me to take like this kind of stuff like very seriously, because mm-hmm. it's just also because like these aren't real religions, if that makes sense, like
and in a lot of ways couldn't be.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like
we are
like,
a religion also, on death.
Exactly, because like when you comparatively the experiences that you, especially, well, I'm talking about D&D here, the experiences that you have with the gods of this game are fairly, they're not omnipotent, they're not like all powerful, they're very there's literally a point where you get to the point where you can kill a god. Mm-hmm, I'd be surprised if it conflicted with people's religious belief, because you're not it's so unrealistic to me. And
well, and so unlike our like modern monotheistic religions.
Exactly.
Right.
And actually very unlike even polytheistic religions. D&D religion doesn't work the way that polytheistic religions actually work.
Exactly. So in that respect, I mean, you might want to examine that that in order to like kind of take a step back from it. If you haven't thought about that, you might want to like look further. Like it's so embarrassing. I can't take it seriously. Like it's very, you know, fantasy, you know,
right. But yeah,
it's
very, that's like, what it is. I mean,
yeah. And it's, you know, these religions and fantasy are based around these agendas for the sake of having awesome fun fighting. Right.
Yeah. Exactly,
so it's like, there's a cult of a guy that's an awesome dragon. There's a religion of a guy who's like a totally evil guy. There's a cult that's super secret, you guys.
Right, you can't find
out about it.
Right.
Unless we tell you about it, and we won't because it's secret.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's... they are very removed. And I think the problem is that game writers are getting a lot better at communicating this feel of this world. They want you to be immersed in it. So what do? They use religious words, they use religious terms, you know, they talk about mysteries and transubstantiation and things like
that. Use the iconography.
Yeah. Exactly. That make you feel like you're learning about an actual religion, and that's what I think a lot of the time is what sits across with people, because you're reading this and it's like, oh, this is a clear parallel to
this
character from this religion or something like that, and that's what they're going for.
Like Asmodeus is like obviously super Satan-y.
Right, right, exactly.
Right.
So I think that you might want to take a step. I think if you're worried about, I don't want to diminish what the like concerns that people have about it.
Right.
Because I'm like a godless heathen, but I do want to say, yeah, I am. But
I am too. Basically,
I want to say that maybe take a step back and think that in real life you have to deal with the fact that there are other religions other than yours, and like, if you can deal with that, like, I think you can come to terms with these fake religions existing, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I think that you're powerful enough to overcome that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
it's dangerous out there. Take one of these.
Exactly.
You know, oftentimes on the show, we have talked about books, either the Dungeons & Dragons books or the Salvatore books, mm-hmm. kind of stuff. There's a book that, you know, when we listen about problems that GMs, DMs have with players and that players have with one another, there's a book that I would like to try to recommend to people to just check out, or at least go to the wiki, because I know you can find it. It's called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a leadership fable. It's a leadership guide on how do you deal with stuff. But it deals with topics like trust, communication, you know, pointing out other people's faults and calling them on the table a lot of the times. And this book might be something that might help a lot of people who are either at the table as a PC or as someone who's trying to lead a group of people mm-hmm. through these things to open up those lines of communications and really create a good team dynamic. So it's called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, a Leadership Fable. It's relatively interesting. It came out in 2002. It's very popular among many leadership circles.
Has it finally replaced the like seven habits of highly successful people?
No. Hmm. It lives alongside that, and
yeah,
my
and also the where's my cheese? Yeah, who touched my cheese? And the purple cow.
who cut the cheese?
Yeah, who cut the cheese? But check it out. I would encourage people to check it out. And if you want to buy this book, either for your e-reader, your Kindle, your Amazon, your iPad, or whatever, or if you want to buy it in a physical form, do us a favor. Head over to MajorSpoilers.com and use the Amazon.com link there if you want to buy it. We get a little bit of money from every purchase that's made through that link, and it certainly helps us out. And for you out there who are trying to lead and guide, even if you're a young person, check out this book. And it might help you out. Again, The Five Dysfunctions of the Team, a Leadership Fable. All right, that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. Brian, thank you so much for staying aware for this. I know it's late, and we appreciate it. And same way with Matthew, who has to get up early and go to work. And, of course, Adriana is on the West Coast, so it's 10 o'clock for you or something like that?
Whatever. 11:32.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right, yeah. Everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We will hopefully be back next week. We will check and see
if
again.
It's 11:32 on the West Coast. That means it's the Bronze Age here.
Yes. See what he did? All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We will check you out next time. And until then, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.